Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free on Patreon. This week I'm talking to Dave Mackey about his book, Spirit Test, From Childhood Hauntings to Present-Day Miracles, One Average Man Put Spirituality and Paranormal to the Test, literally. Dave grew up in a haunted house. He is a paranormal investigator and a medium. Hey Dave, thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Simon.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Spirit Test, A Breadcrumb Path for the Transcendentally Challenged. Was that you? Were you transcendentally challenged?
Oh, I was definitely transcendentally challenged. I'm challenged at many things, but wrapping my head around the ghostly events of my child. And as a child, you don't know what to make of a spirit world that I thought was picking on me. And the older I got, the more I just became more curious about the spiritual world. But I bumbled my way into everything. So as we go through the book, you're going to hear me do tests, spirit tests, which is basically asking spirit for a sign, where I'm asking the sign, where I'm asking spirit if I should divorce my wife, which is crazy. Why would anyone ask the spirit world if they should divorce their wife? So it's been a long, long journey. And we're all explorers when it comes to this, right? You know, we're digging in the dirt and we find a coin 6 inches down. But what about 10 inches down? What about a foot down? Is there more treasure to be found? And I've been digging ever since, just looking for just the spiritual world and all it has to offer. And oh my God, have I found a lot.
So you did it with tests. And how did that start out? What was the first test?
It started because as a child, I'd grown up in what I thought was a haunted house. But I started doing some reading. And I read this. I love a good anecdote. I love a good inspirational quote. And I read this quote. And it's so, I'll read it in the voice that it was in my head when I wrote it, when I read it. And it's this: most men lead lives of quiet desperation and go to their graves with their music still inside. And when I read that, and that's from David Thoreau, it really struck me because I was like 40 years old and I always wanted to write, even though I find it very difficult. And it was that quote that kind of just lit a fire under my butt. I decided I'm gonna give this a go. And I knew as a child that there was a spiritual world that used to poke at me and kind of taunt me. But as an adult, our brains don't like mysteries. We tend to rationalize the way the things of our youth. Did that really happen like that? You know, we all question ourselves. We're all looking for logical reasons. And so I sat down. And also at that same time, a good friend of mine was on Crossing Over with John Edwards. And she reported back to me that she thought it was the real deal. She got read. And I believed her. So if this guy can communicate with the dead, Jonathan Edwards, James Van Prague, these mediums, and I grew up in a haunted house as a kid, what, maybe I can reach out to spirit? So I'm not going to make a long story short. I'm going to continue. So I started reading all these books. Okay, how do you communicate with the spirit world? And I read a lot of books. One that really jumped out at me was James Van Prague's Talking to Heaven. And it talked about grounding yourself. It talked about relaxing, meditating. So I found myself one night saying, I'm going to do this. I'm going to see if there is a spirit world out there. And if it doesn't work, no one's going to know. I'm sitting in my hot tub in my bathing suit asking for signs from spirit. It'll just stay with me because nothing, if nothing happens, no one's going to laugh at me. So I sat in my hot tub. I relaxed. I followed the rules as I had read from James Van Praagh. And his book also suggested that we have these spiritual helpers called spirit guides. Okay, we have spirit guides. Are they angels? He seemed to think that spirit guides were angels. Other people think that they're not, but whatever. So I, at my first attempt, sat in my hot tub, relaxed. I actually focused on my chakras. I read about that, my energy centers. And I asked my spirit guide for a sign. And I'd phrased it something like this. Spirit guide, you know, as evidence of your existence, can you please bring me a purple flower? That was my request. Please bring me a purple flower. And then the next night, I kind of went through the same routine. Sat in the hot tub, grounded myself, filled myself up with love. And I shouldn't have a problem saying the word love. It's what this is all about. That's what I learned, that this whole spiritual journey is all about love. But at that point, I was like, really, love? I got to think loving thoughts. So anyway, I thought loving thoughts, and I said it again. Spirit guide, as evidence of your existence, please bring me a purple flower, if you will. And let me know that it's from you, if you can. You know, let me feel it. And then I did this for a couple of weeks. And then my brain was doing what my brain does. Hey, Dave, you're being kind of silly here. You know, you're sitting in your hot tub. You're asking dead people or spirits or a spirit guide or an angel to bring you a sign. And, you know, people are going to talk. And, you know, so I still continued. And then one day I was at the store and I saw some purple flowers for sale. I'm like, is that my sign? The purple flower? Is that my sign? I asked for a purple flower. But I didn't really feel anything. And then I remember getting home, and actually a couple of days passed, and I noticed on my neighbor's lawn, hey, there's some purple flowers growing there. Is that my sign? Is that my sign from spirit? And I wanted to believe. Our brains want to believe. We all want to believe in heaven. We all want to believe in angels and spirits. I wanted to believe, but I wasn't sure. I just wasn't. It didn't hit me over the head. And then I started feeling silly about the whole thing. You know, and then one day when I actually was least expecting it, my daughter came home and she gave me an envelope, and it had some of her art supplies in it that she had created over the year. So I'm emptying out her little folder, and inside the folder is a purple flower that's bent out of pipe cleaners. And all of a sudden, I get this chill over my body. And a din of a thought in my head saying, here's your sign. So I didn't freak out. I just said, wow, I was not expecting a purple flower to arrive in my life made out of pipe cleaners. So, this means there's it might be time for another spirit test after this, because, you know, one test doesn't make for a successful study. That was my first spirit test. That was my first spirit test, asking for a purple flower to come into my life. And when it comes into my life, I want to know it's from spirit. And I struggled with it, and it took longer than I thought. Now, after I wrote my book, I became a pseudo celebrity in my very small town of Nashua, New Hampshire. And I went out with one of my clients, Jackie. And she's like, Dave, I read your book. I'm fascinated. I'd love to reach out to my mom and see if she's still around. And I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of what I did. I kind of relaxed my body. I grounded myself. I breathed in healing light. I raised my frequency of thinking loving thoughts. And she's like, no, I'm just going to ask right now. And I'm like, okay. And she said, Mom, bring me a rose. Bring me some roses, Mom. I want to know you're still around. Please bring me a rose. Within a week, she had received 5 roses, all ranging from a real rose that someone handed it to someone sending her an email that bloomed. It was an animation that bloomed into a beautiful rose. to a cookbook she had ordered 6 months before that had a giant rose on the cover, and so on and so forth. And she truly believed that was a sign from her mom. And this gave me confidence because, okay, my first experiment worked, and I talked to someone, and now it's working for them. And what I found over the years is that people who read my book, it works for them. It tends to work for them. Not always, obviously, but so many people, that's what I always thought, that success was making a lot of money and becoming a celebrity. No, success now is getting the emails. I've reached my mom. I've reached my dad. I now believe. And yeah. Yeah. So Spirit Test has been a success for me. Maybe not financially. They're not making a movie out of it yet. But those emails, I love it.
And you mentioned there that grew up in a haunted house. And I wanted to ask you about this time. I think you were 15 years old and you were walking around the house threatening the ghost.
Oh, that. Right. Right. Well, yeah. As a kid growing up, I was scared bleepless in that house. So many things had happened, and we may or may not talk about them. But the older I got, the ballsier I got. And one day, my buddy and I, Steve, a little hoodlum friend who lived next door, we're kind of walking around the block with our leather jackets. You know, this is like 1989, 88. And we decided we were going to go in my house. Now, that shouldn't be a hard decision for anyone to go in your house. But I thought my house was haunted. And my house was always empty. Because my brother and sister were off at college. And my mom and dad, I was a late baby. So they were in their mid-50s at this point. So they were out playing bridge. So my house, I was a very lonely kid. Let me just tell you that. anyway, so Steve and I got the nerve to go into my house. So we walked in, and just because I'm weird and because we were trying to be funny and lighten the mood, I threw back my shoulders like I was a thug. I'm like, all right, spirits, you guys think you're so tough? Well, you mofos, if you think you're so tough, why don't you come out? Come on out right now. I'm not 10 anymore. I'm 15. And then my buddy Steve did the same thing, and he used even coarser language. Come on, you mofos, bring yourself out. And him and I went around the house threatening all spectral beings that we were going to mash them to a pulp if they were to bother us. And you know what? It was lightening the mood. We were kind of bringing higher, even though it was very coarse discourse, energy to the situation. We were trying to make ourselves laugh. But I got into my bathroom, and I turned, and I said, I'm going to hit your dead grandmother so hard that your dead grandmother's going to, so you better show yourself right effing. And right when I was getting to that point, a giant scream, screech right behind my ear, just let go, just blasted in my ear. And I couldn't believe it. It sounded like a cat on fire. That's how I would describe it. An angry hiss. And I, being, you know, the strong 15-year-old that I was, screamed and ran out of my house with my arms waving. And I slept with the light on for the next 5 years. Because that was proof to me that all the things that had happened in the years past probably really did happen. Probably did, because I asked for it to come out. Because I was picking a fight with it, and something screamed in my ear. Now, my back was against the wall in the back of my bathroom, and no one could have snuck up behind me. There was no windows open. There was no, something screamed in my ear. And what I didn't know, but I sure hell wish I did, is that was the last real paranormal event I experienced in that house. And I didn't know that. I thought it was might be things are ramping up now. So, you know, I'm 15 years old, sleeping with my light on, you know, I wasn't proud of it, but that's what you do. And the years passed and went off to college, and things kind of settled down. until my friend went on the Crossing Over show with John Edwards. But yeah, that's kind of how we handled the ghost in that house. But for what I didn't think, now that I'm older, I don't think my house was truly haunted. There was something there. I got it. But I think I drew it in with my fear. As I already said, my brother and sister were much older than me, and they were off at school, off at college. My mom and dad, great parents. But, you know, they liked to drink gin martinis and play bridge with their friends. So I was left home alone a lot. And when I was about 7 or 8, and I'm sure you've heard this story many times, and maybe it happened to you, there was a TV show called In Search Of, right, with Leonard Nimoy. And here I am, 7, 8 years old, already kind of afraid of my house, and there's In Search Of. And to me, that's a news program. And there's Leonard Nimoy talking about poltergeists, showing visual evidence of plates being thrown around the room, early EVPs grabbed of spirits speaking. And to me, as a child, I think that's the news. That's the equivalent of the news. Okay, the world is full of scary dead people who can and might come to my house and bother me. And I was so fearful because I was home alone a lot. And I think my fear fed whatever was out there. And I don't know until this day, but like kind of from that, from age 7 to 15, all hell broke loose, you know, spiritually or paranormally in my life.
And just as an aside to that, talking about fear with ghosts, but your dad was a bit different, wasn't he? He tried to punch one.
Isn't that? I always thought that was a unique response to any phenomena that we don't know. And we wonder why, like, space creatures or whatever don't come to our planet. But the story was, in 1978, I don't know if you'd ever heard of this, but we had what was called the Great Blizzard of 1978 in New England. Yeah, like 30-something inches of snow. And my dad had the glorious career of being a paintbrush salesman. And he was out doing his duty, doing his sales, and the blizzard hit. And he had to find cover fast. And the only place he could find was a dumpy motel in Albany, New York. So my dad, who happened to be a veteran, he served in World War II. He just missed the Battle of the Bulge by like 24 hours. He was held up in Belgium and missed the whole thing. But anyway, my dad, you know, is a tough guy. But that night, he was settling in to go to sleep in this dumpy place. And it's snowing outside, and there's a street light out there. And my dad is stirred awake, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning. And he looks, and he sees this woman wearing a dress gown, you know, just kind of walking across. And he could see the snow and the street light through her. And he just kind of watched it walking, floating in front of his bed. Now, my dad, being the World War II vet that he is, you know, okay, there's a threat. Well, what do you do with a threat? Well, you take it out. So my 52-year-old father leapt from the bed and tried to punch the ghost in the face. And his hand went right through the apparition, which seemed unfazed. And he toppled off the edge of the bed and rolled into the wall. And I always thought that was a unique way to handle. I mean, I didn't handle the paranormal much better as a child. Believe me, I screamed and ran out of the house. My dad wanted to fight it. And I remember reading a Kurt Vonnegut book where he talks about this race of aliens who come down to Earth, who are very friendly. They wanted to make friends with us. But the only way these aliens could communicate with us was by tap dancing and farting. So what did the human species do? They killed them. They shot them. And so that's kind of I always thought it was funny how we handle odd phenomena. You know, do we want to hit it? Do we want to defend ourselves? Is there something to be afraid about? And you know what? I don't blame my dad. My dad basically just went right back to bed after that, you know, like nothing had happened. But this kind of helped me. It kind of legitimized me a bit in his eyes, because I kept telling him, Dad, this freaking place is haunted. This has happened. This has happened. This has happened. This has happened. Oh, son, you know, he probably thought I was a bit of a puss. You know, he survived World War II, and here I am complaining about invisible beings in my bedroom. Dave, yeah, okay, yeah. And then he had his own encounter, and he treated me differently after that. He was more open-minded to listen to my stories. So, yeah, that was that story. I thought it was funny.
So you started off doing the tests, and it was to do with meditation and asking questions. And over time, you get better and better at it, and it takes you less amount of time to get into the right headspace.
Well, yeah, just like everything, the more you practice, you know, our brain is a muscle, and maybe our sixth eye is a muscle, you know, our third eye, excuse me. Yeah, but yeah, the more I did this after the first spirit test succeeded, I said, you know, let me try some more tests. Let me try some more tests. And so it got easier. I started to accept the fact that, okay, breathe in love, breathe in peace. My mind is a very busy place. I don't know whether you can tell, but I've got ADD. I speak very fast. My thoughts are very fast and quick, all over the place. So when I meditated, I'm trying to create a communication channel for something to get through. Because if something is going to speak to me, it will likely be through my thoughts. I knew that. So I did everything I could to quiet my mind. That 10-lane highway is now a single lane of traffic, and I've slowed it down in my head. And I got this idea that for my second spirit test, I'm gonna try to reach out to a particular spirit, a spunky old woman that was my wife's grandmother, who had recently passed about a year before. So again, I sat in my hot tub, and it doesn't have to be a hot tub, believe me, but you know, it's a good reason to blow $5,000 on a hot tub. But I sat there and I grounded myself. You know, I filled myself with love and peace. I actually imagined the spirit realm to be like a radio station, and the spirit realm kind of broadcasted at 108 FM WGHOST. How's that? 107. But here I am operating at 92.5, you know, soft rock from the 70s. I got to raise my vibration. So I sat in my hot tub. I tried to actually visualize the tuner going up towards a higher frequency. I kept thinking of love. And then I proclaimed my spirit test. Grandma Eliza, as evidence of your continued existence, can you blink the light? And then I had to think, because I have over 60 lights in my house. So blink the light over my kitchen sink. Blink the light over my kitchen sink. If you are still in my life, if you are still around. So, and I asked that a couple times and grounded myself. And then, oddly enough, I broke one of the cardinal rules. I kind of forgot that I asked for the sign. Because a week or two had passed, and my mind being what it is, I had forgotten. But we're one night, Laura and I are eating dinner. We got our two little kids there. And all of a sudden, the light over the kitchen sink goes out. I'm like, what the hell? 10 seconds later, boop, pops back on. Oh, okay, great. All right, next night, same thing, goes off, comes on after 10 seconds. Oh, that's weird. I'm too lazy to get up and check the light bulb. Okay, guys, just understand that this is me. And it happened again and again. Sometimes it'd go off for a minute, then come back on. Sometimes it'd be for 10 minutes and then come back on. Finally, I had to go up and check the light bulb. So I got up on my counter and I checked the light bulbs, and it was fine. They were screwed in fine, and the lights were on. They're working. And it continued happening. The light going off, coming on, going off, coming on. So I called my neighbor, Max, who is an electrician. He's more of a handyman, but he's an electrician. He can do anything with electricity. I said, hey, dude, I'm having an electrical issue. Could you pop on over and just see what's going on? It's driving the family crazy. And Max came over. And as soon as he got in the house, it hit me. It hit me. This was exactly the sign I had asked my wife's grandmother, Eliza, to show me. I knew it. I got the chills in my head. I got the faint thought, here's your sign in your head. And I turned to Max, and Max being my friend, I said, Max, there's no need to check the wiring. It's me communicating with my wife's dead grandmother. And that's the light she's been blinking. And so he took it with grace, but he went in there and he checked the wiring anyway. And the light was fine. Light was fine. And it never blinked again. It never blinked again. Actually, that's not exactly true. It didn't blink again for 2 years. 2 years later, I'm sitting at a bar. This is just a separate little side story. And I'm telling a person about my book. And I'm telling them about the story of Eliza. And I'm telling them the story about the blinking of the light that I had chosen of all the lights to blink. And he thought that was fascinating. And that conversation happened at like 9:30 at night at a bar. When I got home, my wife said, the light's blinking again. I'm like, well, when did it start? She goes, at 9:30. Is it still blinking? She goes, no, it went off. So that I can't explain. I mean, I can't explain either, but you know, the second time might've been just a coincidence, but I doubt it. Yeah, that was my second spirit test.
Lights, electricity. Why would you ask for them to blink lights? Is it something spirits have easy access to, or it's something that's easy for them?
Yeah, that's what I was led to believe. That's, you know, all the books I've read, and it's easier for them to, you know, blink a light or actually work with the elements and animals, if you ask me, than it is to, I don't know, manifest themselves or move something. So definitely, you know, every time I go to a funeral now, I'm always looking up because I've seen so many blinking lights, and I know at funerals, one of my friend John's, his sister passed away. And I remember going there and everyone was sad, and she was a beautiful woman and lovely. And I looked up, and every once in a while I would catch a light, just blink and come back on, blink and come back on. And I've been to other funerals where at other places where the lights would blink and come back on. And I would tell people out there, some of your listeners, you know, hey, next time you're at a funeral or at a hospital, even look for blinking lights. When my father passed, which was horrendous in my life, I remember that, I said goodbye to him. He had had a heart attack and his blue body was in the room, and he had been dead for about an hour, and it was horrible. But what happened is the lights started blinking and then went off, and only in that room and not in the waiting room and not anywhere else in the hospital. So yeah, the blinking of lights, I probably wrote about in Spirit Test too many blinking lights. So I've had a lot of luck with the blinking of lights. If someone wanted to start with a spirit test, pick a light and see what happens, you know?
And when you do the tests and something turns up that you think might be a result, that might actually be spirit communication, yeah, you have this tingling that kind of signifies, yeah, this is the one.
Yeah. As I progress down this road, which I started with feeling silly to now starting to really believe, I started to get kind of more sensitive. And I started to get this tingling feeling in my body. And from reading that I had done, some people described it as a kundalini or an inner shower feeling. And to this very day, even right now, if I try to communicate with the spirit world, if they answer, I feel it. I still feel it in my body. Now, 5 years ago, it was more than just a feeling. I was getting images in my mind, in words in my mind, and feeling like a presence. But I haven't been meditating that much the past couple of years, so I definitely still get that inner shower, that tingling, you know, like you're walking by a graveyard or you get spooked and you get that the hairs on your end stand up. It's kind of like that. And yeah, I still get those. And I use that as a sign to kind of validate. Let's say if I get I've been on multiple paranormal investigations. So I trust what my camera's getting. I trust what my meters are getting, but I trust how my body feels. I trust the thoughts in my head, my inner dialogue, to try to weed out spirit communication from my normal thoughts.
Hi, this is Simon. Do you have a fascination with reincarnation? And would you like to know about your past lives? I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom. If you'd like to find out how a session works for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website. That's at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. So has there been any really standout incidents while you're doing these investigations?
Well, there's been a couple of things happened. I've been on many, when I wrote the book, as I said, I became a pseudo celebrity in this area. So I kept getting calls to speak at bookstores, do podcasts, go on radio stations. But the paranormal groups wanted to invite me along because they liked the book. And I said, sure, this sounds very interesting. So on one of the early ones, I was asked to go to Laconia, New Hampshire, where this woman's bed was vibrating and drawers were opening and closing. And I'm like, I actually told Jeff, the guy who wanted me to go with him, I said, I don't think I should go to this one. This woman has a real problem. And I'm just an author who's asking spirits for signs. He said, no, come along. You can be of help. So we went there and we all did a group EVP session. We all got quiet, meditated. And then all of a sudden in my head, because this is right in the middle of my spirit testing stuff, when I was actually getting words, voices, pictures in my head, I kept getting this name, Louis, 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 just repeat like a broken record. That's how spirit tended to communicate with me. So I asked the woman, was there a Louis in your life that makes any sense to you? And she said, oh my God, yeah, he was the love of my life. But he beat me. He beat me terribly. And he died some years ago, but yeah, the love of my life, but I hated him. And I believe I might have picked up Louis, and perhaps Louis was the reason why this woman was getting all this stuff happening at her house. So as we were leaving, and I was with a videographer, and I was with two people who claimed to be mediums, and one of them turned around and says, we're being watched. I said, we're being watched? He goes, yep. And so I took my camera, turned around, and I took a picture of the house that we just left. And then I came home, and then I looked at the pictures. And on one of the pictures, I'm like, huh, what's that? And it looked like just digital noise. But when I zoomed in close to it, I see a demonic face. I sent you the picture. I don't know if you can see it or not, but it looks like the Joker. It looks like a clown. It looks evil to me. And that was my first brush with, you don't want to F with this. You don't want to mess around with the spirit world. There was also another time I was invited to, actually, I'm a videographer and a producer by nature, and I was called to produce a pilot episode for Nat Geo called The Sheriff of Ghost Town. So I was invited to this mansion, this haunted mansion in Gardner, Massachusetts. You can look it up. This place looks haunted as hell. Other TV shows have done their shows there, like Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures, whatever. And so I went there. And I didn't experience a whole ton of stuff, but everyone else did. But when I was leaving, I had some tingles around my shoulder that just, I know that feeling. And I know it's a spirit feeling. And I'm kind of talking to myself, no, you're not coming home with me. If that's what your intent is, you're not coming home with me. Okay. And then all of a sudden the volume on my GPS goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down. Something was effing with me. I said, no, I do not give you permission to come home with me. Okay. You can't. And I came home. Nothing happened. A week later, I don't know if you know the name of Jeff Belanger.
No, I don't.
Okay, yeah, he's well known in this field. He worked on Ghost Adventures for a while. He lives in New England, but he was speaking about his ghostly adventures at the Nashua Library, and I attended it. And he told me a story. He says, you know, just recently, I visited this mansion in Gardner, and this is him telling the story, and when I came home, something followed me home because my daughter woke up the next morning screaming because something was bouncing on her bed. And this to me was, okay, I'm not losing my mind. This guy had something follow him home. I thought I had something following me home, but my brain was trying to rationalize it away. So I talked with Jeff afterwards and he sent it on its way. He wasn't afraid. But that confirmed in my head that, yes, something was trying to follow me home. So if you start looking at some of the demonic faces that I've got, there's also another picture that I sent you. And I know your viewers can't see it, but if they ever went to my fan page on Facebook, I don't know if Facebook is big in the UK. There's also a very terrifying face that we captured. And to me, that's it. I already know there's a spirit world. I already know it can be spooky. Now, maybe they have great intentions, but I think of the spirit world like people. Most people are good, but there's some rotten apples. I think most spirits are good, but there must be some rotten apples out there. I don't know. So I've kind of retired from the ghost hunting business.
So what is this thing with energy? Because you did a test with bread, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm that crazy guy. Have you ever seen the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? Is that the name of it? Something like that. What the Bleep Do We Know? Yeah. And in that movie, and this is right around, I'm writing my book, and I'm looking for interesting things to try that tie me to the spiritual world or whatever. But right around that same time, I watched this movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? And there was this doctor, Dr. Masaru Emoto, and he did tests on ice crystals. And he found that human thought and emotions can affect the formation of ice crystals. So if you were to look at a perfect ice crystal, it looks like a snowflake. But he did all these tests with snowflakes where he put horrible words next to them. He provided horrible emotional stimuli to the water. And then he froze it and looked at it, and they were twisted. The ice crystals were not perfect. They were twisted. Now, do I believe this? I'm interested. I'm agnostic about everything. I really am. Not that I don't have faith. I just want some proof. I want to believe. So I'm like, all right, let me try something. If images and words affect matter, then let me try a couple of tests. So I don't know, what could I do? So, all right. So I took this two hot dog rolls from the same bun, the same package, and I put them together. And I don't know if it's the hot dog buns or the regular bread. I did a couple of tests. And on one of the bread, I put, I hate you. You're the worst piece of bread. Death. Hitler. And I wrote all these horrible things. And I put it on a piece of paper on top of the bread. And then the bread was covered in a cellophane thing. And then on the other one, I wrote, I love you. Love, love, love. You're the best piece of bread ever. You're the best piece of bread. I love you. Love, love, love. And what I found was, and I sent you some pictures of this, is that the piece of bread that had the negative words associated to it, it got moldy and started to deteriorate fast, fairly quickly, while the other piece of bread that had the loving sentiments attached to it stayed the same. Now, I'm sure it was crusty and not edible, but I was like, huh. So I tried the same test with some other bread, but this time I put a picture of Hitler underneath one of them, and I put a picture of Jesus under the other one. Did the same test. Same results. So, you know what? Am I a scientist? Am I doing controlled experiments? No, I'm doing things for myself. I'm doing my own spirit tests. You know what? I'm doing my own exploring, and I'll tell you what I find. And that's, I've done it 5 times, and every time the bread that was positioned near words of hate or pictures of evil deteriorated quickly, and the ones that didn't were preserved. So that just got me thinking about, you know, if you're wearing a shirt, let's say, that's pressed up against your heart and it's got hate speech on it, or you got clothes that have loving sentiments on it, I think that stuff affects us. I think it really does.
So you say you were agnostic with a lot of stuff. Were you agnostic at first with these tests? Was there one that happened and you thought, okay, that's it. I do believe this is real.
Well, definitely the episode when I was 15 of calling the ghost out, boom, real, you know, a real time answer. The Eliza light, definitely. Now, I guess sometimes I don't want to give too much information because I want people to, you know, perhaps possibly buy the book and read it. But from one of my last spirit tests, I did something. I knew I was taking the easy way out by having spirits blink lights. I've had hundreds of lights blink because I've asked. That, I got that. But that's also kind of fairly easy for the spirit world to do. So for one of my last spirit tests, I said, all right, I got to do something that can't possibly be a coincidence, that this is absolutely could not be refuted in any way in my own head and anyone else's head. So what was I going to do? Okay. All right. To this point, I had not tried to contact my father, because if, let's say, I try to contact my father and it fails, that hurts. So I really didn't want to even take the chance of communicating with my father. But on this last test, I said, all right, I'm going to try to communicate with Dad. And what can I ask for a sign that has never happened before? Okay, this is what I'm going to do. I said, Dad, I did the same old grounding procedure, sat in the hot tub, meditated, grounded myself. Hey, Pop, can you bring a morel mushroom into my life? I want a morel mushroom to grow on my property. I want you to grow something in my property that has never grown on my property ever as a sign of your existence. And I asked it again and again. And on this time, I remember I was really focused. Usually when I'm trying to meditate, other images try to pop into my head. But this time I was really locked in. Dad, please bring me a sign of your continued existence. I want a morel mushroom. And there is a tie to the morel mushroom to my family. When my father was a child living in Ohio, his father would take him out and they would go morel mushroom hunting. Because, I guess life was so boring back then. That's what they did. There was no internet. There was no TV. So they went morel mushroom hunting. And that always stuck with me. So I asked for a morel mushroom. Now, months pass, and I tell people when they're asking for signs from spirit, sometimes give it time. Sometimes give it a season. Because I asked for this sign probably in February or March, and I know that this is an item that grows in the springtime, early summer. So one day in June of that same year, about 4 months later, I'm in my kitchen and I get this thought in my head, and I'm learning to keep track of the thoughts in my head. I don't just nearly go, you know, I listen to them and then decide whether it's worth acting on. And this one said, hey, Dave, go grab your camera and take some pictures of your living room. That was the thought in my head. And me going, okay, all right, I don't know where this will lead me, but this is kind of how the spirit process works. Let's grab the camera. So I grabbed the camera, and this is a long time ago. This is like, I don't know, 2005 or something. And I'm snapping off pictures. And then I take the pictures and I put them on my computer. I'm like, nope, nope, it's a picture of my fireplace. Nope, picture of my mantle. Okay, go to the next one. Ah, what's that? And it was what we would call an orb right above, or actually overlapping, a picture of my dad and my mom that I have on the mantelpiece. I said, what's that? Is that dust? Because we all know what orbs are and what they can and cannot be. I'm pretty picky about orbs. I wasn't then, but these days I'm pretty picky about what is an orb and what isn't an orb. But at that point, I was like, well, that's weird. That looks like an orb to me. And then I shut off my computer, and then my brain said these words to me. Go outside, take a right, and look down by the waterspout. Okay. All right. I'm not going to argue with my brain. My brain just told me to take pictures of my living room, and there's something over my father's picture. So I listened to my brain. I walked outside. I took a right. I looked straight down at my feet because that's where I was directed. And there is a morel mushroom growing, something that has never grown on my property ever, something that has great significance to my family, only because my dad told me stories when he was a kid about going with his pop and going mushroom hunting. It was a good memory for him. And then that obviously sealed the deal for me and blew my mind. That night, I'm in bed and I fall asleep and I have the most vivid dream of my life. It's a lucid dream. It's a dream where you feel you're awake. And in this dream, I'm walking and I'm holding my dad's hand. And he looks like he's about 40 and he's just smiling at me. No words have to be spoken at this point. All I feel is love. There's that word again, love, happiness, joy. And in the foreground, I see this, I don't know, it's like this large hand just kind of reaching down from the sky. I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's God or whatever, but we were just walking hand in hand, walking towards that large hand. And then I woke up. And I woke up with the feeling like in my hand that I just held his hand. So that to me, that story in and of itself was the clincher on my spirit tests. Because our brains don't like mysteries. Our brains will demystify the mysterious, you know? And at this point, nope. They all happened. They're all real. Stick to your guns, Dave. You're not losing your mind. And so that was really kind of my last spirit test for a while. How's that?
So would you say that you're a medium now?
I'm more of a large, extra large. Now I've been after COVID. No, I'm kidding. And I would say yes. I would say I don't think I'm a full medium, or at least when I was really truly meditating and focusing on love. I am love. I am love. I am love. I am peace. I am connected. I focus on my chakras. When I was in the middle of that for 2 years, strange things happened. And I can only assume I was kind of feeling more. And I remember this one at the very beginning, one of the first ones that happened to me about feeling more was I was home by myself and my wife, Laura, was with the kids at my sister's house. I'm sitting there watching TV and I'm watching A&E. And it was a biography and it's about this actor and how this actor lost his family in a car accident. Oh, how depressing, how sad. All of a sudden, I start getting sad. I start pacing around. I'm like, then I walk outside my house pacing, like, where's my wife? Where's my kids? Where's my wife? Where's my kids? And all of a sudden, I burst out crying. Now, I'm a 40-year-old man who doesn't cry much. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Why am I crying? I just felt so sad. I felt so heavy. And then the phone rang. And this, you know, I didn't have a cell phone. This was the home phone. And I answered it. And my wife is screaming and crying. They had just been in a car accident. And it turned out that they were okay. The car was not, but everyone was safe. And that was one of the first experiences I noticed that as I started doing my spirit test, yes, I was feeling more. Now, is that a medium thing? I don't know if that one is, but I remember several times I went and I was having some physical therapy done on my shoulder and she's working on me. And all of a sudden I get this kind of like this picture in my mind of a smiling old man and he's got big, thick glasses on and he's just smiling at me and he's standing next to a bicycle. And this is just a flash in my head. I don't know what to make of it because it happened. And I got used to asking people, and this is what I would say to people, ask people if this makes any sense to them. Don't keep it to yourself. So I had the courage to say, hey, is there a man, an older gentleman in your life who may have recently passed, who's shown me a bicycle? And oh my God, the person rubbing my shoulder gave me the whole story about her grandfather who was a bike mechanic who had big thick glasses and a big smile. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, he says hi, and that type of thing kept happening several times. I remember getting my hair cut, and I kept getting. Dolls, 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 repeating itself in my head. Dolls, 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 dolls. And I'm like, I'm talking to the person cutting my hair. I said, is this place haunted? Because the place was in a very old mill building. And she goes, oh, yeah, this place is definitely haunted. We've had things downstairs. There's talk about a little girl who roams around here. I said, okay, is there any... or any connection to dolls because she wants me or something's telling me to tell you dolls. She says, oh my God, the owner collects Raggedy Ann dolls and has about 50 of them. And see, I mean, that doesn't jump out at you as major, but to me, it connected. I could have said anything. She's like, no, that doesn't make any sense, but it made sense. The dolls made sense. The place was haunted. And I've had that happen many times. I remember meditating and my wife walked in and I'm like, what's wrong with Ken? Because when I was meditating, I got the name Ken, 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 just repeating in my head. And she says, my boss is fine. Why? What? Okay, just got his name. The next day he got fired. So little things like that kept happening more and more. And I find it fascinating. I really do.
So do you feel if anybody followed the same process you did, they could probably get this as well?
I do. I tell people, don't listen to me. Do your own spirit test. Just don't let your brain do what it's going to want to do. If nothing happens, then nothing happens. You have nothing to talk about. I have no book to write. So be honest with yourself. Ask for a sign. Now, with me, I prepped my body and I did my relaxation. I tried to raise my frequency to match that of spirit. And then I asked my questions. I had my friend Jackie ask once in the middle of a bar and five things showed up. So yeah, I believe this is something anyone can do. Just, you don't know what, like I asked for a purple flower to come into my life. And you know what it did? One made out of pipe cleaners. So ask for a sign and then be open to it. It might show up differently. But no, I'd start with a blinking light, though. Honestly, I'd probably start with a blinking light.
We've been talking about your book. It's called Spirit Test, A Breadcrumb Path for the Transcendentally Challenged. People can get that on Amazon, can't they?
They can. They might see an older version of the book up there as well, because I did release something in 2010, but it has been updated. So just make sure that they look for the more recent book. It's been updated. Yep.
Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast. It's been fascinating.
Has it? I hope I did okay. Really, I tend to Yeah, sometimes it's like the beginning of my book. I started the book, and I really didn't know where it was going to go. So hopefully this interview went kind of where you hoped it would go.
Yeah, it's been great.
Well, thank you, Simon. I appreciate your hospitality.
So this week I was talking to Dave Mackey about his book, Spirit Test, From Childhood Hauntings to Present Day Miracles, One Average Man Puts Spirituality and the Paranormal to the Test, Literally. A great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get exclusive access to an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get access to an extended episode every month. And you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And please check out my other podcast. It's called the Alien UFO Podcast, and I release new episodes every Monday. I also have a tier on the Our Paranormal Afterlife Patreon campaign, where for $13.50 a month, you can get the Alien UFO Podcast extended episodes every week, as well as the Our Paranormal Afterlife extended episodes. And you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/Our Paranormal Afterlife, or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.